We are going to recap the year in state politics this hour. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine, and this is our state capitol report for this last day of 2012, Monday, December the 31st. Our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, will join us with a look back at a very busy year in state politics after we hear this montage of how the year sounded, compiled by Wisconsin Public Radio's Chuck Wernbach.
What we have done in just 60 days is monumental. We have successfully collected more than 1 million signatures.
You see, I look forward to this opportunity. I relish this.
We are partners. We are a team, and that's why it's important that both members of the team are reelected on June 5th.
In my opinion, all she's done has been a rubber stamp to Scott Walker and his policies. For that case, she's got to go as well.
He will have his mountains and mountains of money, millions of dollars that come from out of state, and I will have people.
The whole election thing, doing it all over again, that pissed me off, and I wanted to be heard.
Usually this time of day, I'm in my pajamas. Let's vote for the man that got Osama. Forward and away we go.
We've made progress these last 4 years, but the reason we're all gathered here, in addition to listening to Bruce, is because we know we've got more work to do.
I'm going to get to sit in a tree stand with my 10-year-old daughter for her fierce deer hunt after we have just elected Mitt Romney the next president of the United States.
I am well aware that I will have the honor to be Wisconsin's first woman U.S. Senator. And I am well aware that I will be the first openly gay member.
I had no doubts in my mind when I woke up this morning that we were going to win the election, and I was really shocked.
He's hired criminal attorneys, and Walker refuses to tell us what he said to the prosecutors.
I pointed out repeatedly I have a high standard of integrity. I've always had a strict policy against using taxpayer resources for political purposes.
This is somebody that worked 20 feet from Scott Walker's office, is alleged to have committed serious crimes.
Is there any question you want to ask me about the decision you made to plead guilty?
No, Your Honor.
Are you pleading guilty because you're guilty of this offense?
Yes, Your Honor.
Under Act 23's new voter ID requirements, Judge Flanagan's decision was an affirmation of the sanctity of voting rights.
Sita Singh, 41 years old, male. Ranjit Singh, 49 years old, male. Satwan Singh Kaleka, 62 years old, male. Prakash Singh, male, 39 years old. Paramjeet Kaur, 41 years old, female. Shubhag Singh Khatada, 84 years old, male.
What happened here? An act of terrorism, an act of hatred, a hate crime.
I am a gun owner. This is not whether or not people should have guns. This is about, we all have to agree that at certain time, certain people should not be able to have a gun.
I can't breathe, son.
No. You're talking about
squid.
You're just playing games.
And if, in fact, this is part of some sort of pattern, I think that it ought to be investigated as such.
We understand the land's going to be raped. And that's called mining, but we didn't know we were going to get raped, too, and that's called the assembly bill.
There are wolf haters.
And I rise today for one final time to address the Senate. And actually, I just want to say one thing. Thank you.
My only good long-term relationship was with Jim Packard. I'm going to miss him terribly.
And thanks to Wisconsin Public Radio's Chuck Wernbach for putting together that montage of some of what the year 2012 sounded like in the state of Wisconsin. And now we'll get some more analysis on the year in state politics, maybe some of your reactions and questions to the biggest stories of the year. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and this is a year-ender state capitol report with Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
So, wow, what a year it's been, huh?
Yeah, it has. I mean, if you compare it to last year, it feels like it was slow somehow, which is funny because when you do start to compile a list like this, you see that a lot went on in 2012.
Well, let's start from the beginning. January of this year, what was some of the first news to take place?
It was very soon after the new year, and a surprise news conference was called in Milwaukee by the Milwaukee County District Attorney's Office. Very little notice given, but reporters got there as quickly as they could, and DA John Chisholm held a press conference to announce charges against three men as part of an ongoing John Doe investigation, and they included Tim Russell, who was Governor Walker's chief of staff, deputy chief of staff when he was Milwaukee County executive, and Kevin Kavanaugh, who ran a military charity over there and was a Walker appointee on a board in Milwaukee County. So D.A. Chisholm detailed the charges against those men.
We did in fact conclude that between 2006 and 2009, Mr. Kavanaugh, the treasurer of the nonprofit organization, illegally used Operation Freedom funds. We also determined that the deputy chief of staff, Tim Russell, who in 2009 was empowered to manage the funds related to Operation Freedom, used those funds for unlawful purposes. We further determined that during his time as a county employee, but while acting as a campaign consultant, Mr. Russell stole funds from two prospective county board candidates.
Wow, that was a year ago already. Yeah. And so we are, bring us through the year, the Cliff Notes version.
Yeah, the Cliff Notes version of that. That was, those were very, those were lengthy criminal complaints there. They're, you know, a little tricky to explain because, as the governor pointed out, he actually tipped off his office tipped off investigators to the stuff that led to the arrest of Kevin Kavanaugh. But then that, sort of on a separate tangent, they found that Tim Russell was doing a very similar crime, which you know, didn't come necessarily from the tip off from the county executive's office. So after that, you had, further people charged. You had Kelly Reinfleisch, another former deputy chief of staff who was accused of doing fundraising. And this was, you know, if you paid any attention to the recall, obviously a huge topic in the recall. And the governor spent considerable amount of money on defense lawyers. But here we stand, end of 2012, for those who thought more, you know, big arrests were going to happen, more big charges, or that the governor himself might be in trouble. It's been about a year and there have been no such charges. And, you know, in the most recent period, he didn't, report any more money going to his defense lawyers. So it's a big question mark for 2013. What's going to happen with that John Doe investigation? We know something's still happening. We know that they're still looking into something, but we don't know what's going to happen there.
Well, speaking of recall, it was in January that recall organizers announced they collected enough signatures to force a recall of Governor Scott Walker.
Yeah, and it was a chaotic scene outside the Government Accountability Board on East Washington Avenue. You had a truck pull up. You had a recall supporters line the sidewalk arm to arm. And it was Julie Wells who stood up on the back of a truck full of petitions and announced that they'd hit the number they were looking for.
What we have done in just 60 days is monumental. We have successfully collected more than 1 million signatures.
Remember, they didn't have to get that high. They needed about 540, used to have these numbers committed to memory, but about 540,000 signatures to force a recall election. Actually, after, 1 million was the number that was thrown around for quite some time, but after the signatures were reviewed, it turns out they had turned in about 900,000 valid signatures, more than enough to force an election. And so at that point, recall supporters and Walker critics were feeling pretty good. That's a lot of people to get the name down on paper and say we want this this governor out. But obviously, that didn't turn out for them. And in fact, a sneak preview. We will get to that part later in our in our review here.
But. Yeah, we're kind of going in chronological order here.
Just
and
for,
we all know what happened in June.
To go,
But let's see. Well, jumping ahead then to March, we're the state legislature is in a debate over mining.
Yeah, and in 2011, the legislature was just hyper busy. They really moved along a number of pieces of the GOP agenda that Republicans had been wanting to pass for a long time. Once you get to 2012, though, things slowed down a bit just because you had, the GOP margins were smaller because they lost a couple seats in the Senate, and so it wasn't as easy to get everything through the Senate. And also you had these other elections pending right on the horizon, and so there just wasn't an appetite to do quite as much big stuff. There was one big bill that came up, and that was mining. The Republicans wanted to have a bill to basically clear the way for a company to mine in northern Wisconsin, but Republican Dale Schultz of Richland Center became a big player in that, said that he was interested in passing a mining bill, but not the one that was up for a vote in the Senate in March.
The people of this state have said over and over again, loudly and clearly, they're not against mining, that they want it done, however, in an intelligent, environmentally safe and sustainable way.
And that was one of those rare votes in the Senate where you actually don't know what's going to happen going in, didn't know what kind of procedural moves they were going to do, and Dale Schultz stood up and gave a lengthy, detailed, impassioned speech about where he stood on mining and why this bill, the Republican bill, was not the one for him.
Yep, and now mining, though, is...
it's going to be on the agenda next
agenda
year, right?
Game, yeah. Are we going to have the same debate going on? But this time, there are enough Republicans in the Senate to pass a Republican bill.
We don't know. I mean, Dale Schultz had all the... He took all the heat last year because he was out there very publicly. And but now that there's a couple vote margin for Republicans there, it might be that you find another Republican in that chamber who says, okay, look, I also want to reach a deal along the lines of Dale Schultz. Or it might be that they have the votes. We'll find out soon enough. You do hear Republicans, including the governor, saying that, well, if we need to make some changes to get some people on board, we're willing to do that. So that may be a sign that the bill that passed last year out of the Assembly will not be the one that becomes law.
I'm Joy Cardine. This is our State Capitol Report for this New Year's Eve morning, Monday, December the 31st, on this last day of the year. Our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, is with us for the whole hour today with a recap of the top stories of 2012 in state politics. We have time for a reflection or a question from you as well, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Checking our weather forecast for today, we can expect a partly cloudy day statewide with high temperatures primarily in the teens. Coming up later today, it's At Issue with Rob Ferret in for Ben Marins today. And after 4 o'clock, Congress is just hours away from the deadline to reach a deal to avert the fiscal cliff. Rob Ferret and his guest will have the very latest on the fiscal cliff situation after 4 this afternoon. We'll be talking about the fiscal cliff and the lack of a deal right now during our 8 o'clock hour. Right now, we are reviewing the top stories of the year in state politics with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. And Sean, we're still in March of 2012, and this was a when there was a court decision on voter ID. Tell us about that.
Yeah, and it wasn't the only court decision we'd see in voter ID, but this was where the first happened in March. You had a Dane County judge issue an injunction blocking the voter ID law from taking effect. And the law was actually in effect for the February election, but a very low turnout election. And so having it blocked in March, first by Dane County Judge Richard Neese, then by Dane County Judge David Flanagan. That's sort of monumental news when you consider that's one of the key pieces of the Republican agenda from 2011. And, of course, we had a couple huge elections coming up in 2012. Lester Pines was the attorney in one of the lawsuits that blocked the voter ID law in Dane County Circuit Court.
The legislature in the spring of 2011 was rushing to do all kinds of things that they had been dying to do for decades, at least the Republican majority was. And so they just rushed through, and if you think you go over there and you look, you'll see that they didn't pay any attention to the Wisconsin Constitution.
It's Lester's take there, Attorney Pines. And, you did hear Republicans, the Republican retort was, this is just a Dane County court, a Dane County judge throwing out the will of the people. You heard that again later in the year for other decisions in the GOP agenda.
And right now it's still held up in the courts.
It is still held up in the courts. And I think that was a little bit of a surprise to some people who thought this is a big deal. This injunction happened way back in March. The Supreme Court, which has moved quickly on other items that were, critical to the GOP agenda. There was some thought that, well, they'll pick this up and the court's got a majority of conservatives and this will be back on the books for the election. But the Supreme Court has, acted thus far very, very diligently. They sent signals that they weren't going to take this up before the November election. It's going through the normal appeals process. Both of these cases are proceeding alongside each other right now, and so that's still a question mark. What's going to happen there? I think if the courts were to strike it down or strike down some pieces of it on the grounds that they violate the state constitution, you could see Republicans potentially amend the state constitution or try to. Because they want this voter ID in place so much.
Another issue in the courts was the redistricting map, the new legislative and congressional boundaries that were drawn up by the Republican-controlled legislature that went to court and mostly survived?
It mostly survived. And, of all the things in this list here, of all the exciting stories we've covered the past couple of years, this probably, probably the most snoozer of the bunch, and yet it has the biggest impacts, arguably, of any of them, because these redistricting maps set the electoral playing field for the next decade. Republicans had the rare opportunity after their wave election wins in 2010, controlling the full legislature and the governor, to draw the maps to their liking. They went to the court, and here are some of the arguments you heard from Republican attorney Dan Kelly and Democratic attorney Peter Earle.
The legislature adopted this map. It was a good map. It's a solid map. It's constitutional. It reflects the judgment of the people of the state of Wisconsin. So that's where the decisions belong, and we're confident that the court's going to look at this very carefully and that they'll come to the conclusion that these decisions are properly made in the legislature.
Yes, it's a political act engaged in by politicians that must be engaged in according to the Constitution of the United States and the Voting Rights Act of the United States. They are subordinate to that law, and this process is designed to enforce that.
So I called Peter Earle a Democratic attorney. He actually was representing Voces de la Frontera there, which is an immigrants' rights group out of Milwaukee. And Peter Earle won his portion of this case. That is, the court found that the way that the legislature drew the 8th and 9th assembly districts in Milwaukee was improper, and actually they redrew those lines. But they only redrew them for those two districts. It wasn't a fatal flaw for the map. The court left the rest of the map intact, and so, while there were some changes made to the map in Milwaukee, the map as a whole remains intact for the next decade, and all that we heard about the secrecy with which the map was drawn and the process, while all of that certainly raised eyebrows, definitely I don't think you'll find many of the public who like the way that the process went. the map as a whole stands.
Yeah, and we just have a short time before a news break. We'll maybe get into the big election news coming up after the news. But when it comes to the redistricting process, Sean, is that something you foresee legislators changing in the next year?
It's hard to see. No, in the next year, no. No, definitely not.
How about in the next 10 years?
Yeah, I think if one party thinks that they are going to be in control, or that they have a plausible possibility of being in control of the next map, why would they change it? And, you know, really, that's sort of what killed Democrats. They had control of state government there for a session and had a chance. Actually, Tom Barrett was urging them to rewrite the redistricting laws, make them more competitive, possibly have a nonpartisan commission do it, and they took a pass. And so then Republicans got a chance to, you know, they got into power and they drew the map that they wanted.
Yeah, and we have less than 30 seconds to go. This means that Republican control of state government could be with us for a very long time.
It could be you just look at what happened in this past November election. And I don't want to sit here and say that that map is the only thing that won the election for Republicans, because they're coming back with 60 seats in the assembly. But this was a good Democratic year. You had a strong candidate in Barack Obama at the top of the ticket. Tammy Baldwin did well in the Senate race. And yet here we are, Republicans with a dominant majority in the assembly.
We'll talk more about those elections and election results as our year-end state capitol report continues, after we take this look at the latest news. We are reviewing the top news of the year in state politics during this edition of our State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us on this Monday, December the 31st, New Year's Eve morning. Our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, is with us, recapping the top stories of 2012 in state politics. And Sean, we made it through March, I think.
I'm not sure.
We did. Yeah. This is such a interesting year in state politics. We had not only a recall election, but we had, of course, a presidential year. And here we are now in April, and it's time for the Republican presidential primary.
Yeah, and if it was one of those things where if I wasn't doing a year-ender and going back through my audio and notes, I don't think I would have remembered that we had a presidential primary here. But we had a fairly contentious little primary campaign between Rick Santorum and Mitt Romney.
Right.
Rick Santorum, who was in Wisconsin repeatedly, including at this bowling alley.
You do not defeat Democratic incumbents by running Tweedledum against Tweedledee on the biggest issues of the election. You win by making clear, sharp contrasts.
And so is he calling Romney Tweedledee or Tweedledum?
I believe he was, yeah. I mean, just a reminder that Rick Santorum took that election pretty seriously. And, you know, a month prior, polls had him leading here.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he had Mitt Romney. It wasn't in Wisconsin as much, but he really turned his attention to President Obama during this primary campaign.
I think the American people are going to have to ask themselves, what does it mean to be American in 2012? What does it mean in 2016?
And he also had another gentleman campaigning with him. This was at a stop in Madison here.
This man understands where we are. This man is a decent man. He's got that sort of upper Midwest earnestness. He is actually from Michigan, by the way. He's not from Massachusetts. That's a compliment. You guys are sorry.
So that was Paul Ryan, of course, and that was really the introduction of the Romney-Ryan relationship on a national stage there. Ryan was just with him everywhere during the campaign, and I think a lot of people felt like that put him over the top, because he didn't put Santorum away, convincingly in Wisconsin, but he beat him. And that really ended up being Rick Santorum's last stand, was here in Wisconsin. He bowed out of the race pretty soon after that.
Yeah, well, that was was Ryan at that time being did people think he was going to be the vice presidential running mate?
No. Yeah. I think he was, just given his stature, I think he may have you know, been listed on a list of possibilities for a while. But yeah, that was he was just very much came out and endorsed, you know, endorsed Romney in a big way there on that tour. And you know, at the stop that I got those two cuts from in Madison, I remember Ryan doing most of the talking. It was kind of a town hall forum, and he seemed like he was taking more questions than was Romney at that event.
And so, meanwhile, while the presidential primary is going on, we also have a recall election going on. Isn't that going on simultaneously, Sean? At least the campaigning for it.
Yeah, and you did have a primary campaign that was in full swing. For Democrats, they had a four-way primary there. Tom Barrett emerged victorious, but unions spent a lot of money on an unsuccessful campaign for Kathleen Falk in that primary. And then almost immediately you had this, an extremely fast campaign, one-on-one between Barrett and Tom Barrett and Scott Walker. And one of the big arguments the Democrats thought they had against the governor, that the state lost jobs in his first year in office. The governor, it was middle May, he announced that his Department of Workforce Development was releasing new jobs numbers that were more accurate and that they showed jobs gains in 2011.
And obviously, I understand the political implications in that it does change the narrative, and that obviously as a candidate that's a positive thing, but it doesn't change the facts, and the facts are clear that Wisconsin gained jobs, and that any of the assertions that are being made now about Wisconsin losing jobs are just plain wrong. They're not factual.
And then Tom Barrett actually at one point accused the governor of cooking the books.
I think we're all in the same boat. None of us know whether these are verifiable. None of these know whether these are numbers that can stand up to the light of day. All we know is that 20 days before the election, he's got a new set of numbers that he's going to trot out.
So we have the beauty of hindsight now. You know, here at the end of the year, we've had time to kind of digest these numbers. And, you know, the numbers that the governor released in mid-May were good numbers. And so they did show that instead of losing jobs in his first year in office, as the, you know, these monthly surveys had shown, that when you take these more detailed census numbers, the state had added jobs. But because there had been so much focus on losing versus added jobs, yeah, you kind of you lose the forest for the trees, right? And so nobody was talking about the fact that Wisconsin was trailing all of its Midwest neighbors, that it was near the bottom of the pack nationally in terms of adding jobs, and the fact that the economy in Wisconsin has just been growing slowly. And at a time when the national economy is growing slowly, Wisconsin's economy has been growing even slower. And that's, you know, that's definitely a story that's going to be with us going into the new year.
All right. So let's get to June 5th. Sean, we have our recall election on that day.
We do. And, you know, one of the biggest elections in Wisconsin history, an election that went national and an election that Scott Walker won handily.
Tonight we tell Wisconsin, we tell our country, and we tell people all across the globe that voters really do want leaders who stand up and make the tough decisions.
And it was a tough one for Democrats to swallow, given all the, you know, not only the work that they put into this race with gathering the signatures, but just the emotional capital. And you know, the fact that this was a tough blow for unions. And Tom Barrett had to deliver a speech that night, a concession speech that, you know, many people in his convention hall didn't want to hear.
To those of you who fought, who obtained signatures, who stood out in the cold, who did what you thought was right, never, ever stop doing what you think is right. That's what makes this such a great country.
And real quick, I think we have some audio from a Walker critic and a Walker supporter just to illustrate where people were and how people were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you remember how intense the feelings were around this election, probably will be for years to come. But one of the governor's critics who was on the Capitol Square that night. Her name was Edwina Key Harbor. Really couldn't believe what she had heard.
Well, I'm accepting it, but I am flabbergasted. I don't understand how a person in good conscience could vote for a man like that. I really can't.
And for Republicans who had been, you know, spent the last, year and a half hearing how they were in trouble, they're going to lose, the governor was going to go down. It was a night of probably the, I would say that the celebration turned to gloating on that night, especially with State Republican Party Vice Chair Brian Schimming.
This is a massive, massive, epic fail by the Democrats in Wisconsin.
And what did we have? About a week later or so, we had a brat fest at the governor's executive residence, which no audio from that will make our year in review here, but definitely memorable images of protesters outside, news helicopters overhead, surreal.
Yeah, that was a strange time. It was the first time a governor survived a recall attempt in the country, Sean, I think.
Yeah, there have been three, mm-hmm. and the other two lost. So Scott Walker, goes down in history as the first to survive a recall election. Mm-hmm. The governor has another election coming up in 2 years. I think if you look at it right now, and it's a long ways out, there's no consensus Democratic challenger. The governor has incredible fundraising abilities at this point. And we haven't seen polling lately, but in all those Marquette polls, when some people's approval ratings were up and down, he was pretty solid at that, around that 50% mark. So, I think you could say he's in pretty good shape heading into 2014. That said, the economy is weak here, and that is the story that any incumbent has to be worried about. So, it's not like he can't be beat. It's going to be a different election. I think the governor knows that when people aren't voting in a recall election, they're going to view him and view his decisions differently. Because remember, in this, exit polls showed a lot of people
just didn't believe in recall.
They didn't like the recall mm-hmm. for a policy decision. And, you kind of wondered if it was a fluke at the time. They had the exit polls showing that Walker voters supported President Obama, and you thought, how could that happen? Well, it did, in November, it ended up being the case. A number of independent voters in Wisconsin were comfortable voting against the recall and, for President Obama.
Real quickly, yeah. Sean, on the Governor Walker's future, certainly he would need to win re-election in 2014, mm-hmm. but we just heard a piece where some people are speculating that Governor Walker wants to run for president in 2016.
He's talked about wanting to play a role in national politics. The sort of special case that Scott Walker has that other, prospective presidential candidates don't have to deal with is that Scott Walker comes from a home state where, his congressman down the road from his hometown is Paul Ryan. And Paul Ryan's on the short list for Republican presidential nod. It's hard to imagine two nominees coming from Wisconsin. And if Paul Ryan wants in, it's just hard to imagine how that would go. You see Paul Ryan on nearly every list. You see Scott Walker on some of them. So 2016 is a long ways off. We don't know what's going to happen.
Well, speaking of Paul Ryan, it was around this time that Romney did pick Paul Ryan as his running mate.
Yeah, and that's huge news for somebody from Wisconsin to be nominated, and it was huge news in his hometown of Janesville, where Paul Ryan went for a homecoming shortly after being picked.
Everywhere I look, I see friends. I see community leaders, I see family members who get up early in the morning, who take risks, who work hard, who sacrifice. They don't know if it's going to work, but it does because they work hard. And you know what? They don't need their president telling them that the government gets the credit. They need to know that we know that they built their businesses and they get the credit.
So that was one of a few times when Paul Ryan featured his hometown kind of prominently in the message that he was delivering to voters, sometimes controversially. You know, in the way that he portrayed the closing of the Jamesville GM plant and whose fault that was. But you know, I'll tell you this, just talking to people in Janesville, certainly not everybody there likes him. The top of the ticket didn't do well in Janesville, in fact, but you know, and it's strictly anecdotally, but when you talk to people there, they're like, well, you know, this is kind of a big deal for our town, given everything that's happened in Janesville with the closing of the GM plant, to have somebody go to a national stage like that.
Then before we get to the November elections, we did have another important court decision, this one regarding Act 10.
Yeah, the governor's collective bargaining bill was struck down in a Dane County Circuit Court. And on the day that the decision was handed down, Peggy Coyne, a teacher from Madison whose name was on the lawsuit, you know, was sort of cautiously optimistic.
I understand this is a major battle, but I truly also get that we haven't won the war.
And so that's another one that's proceeding through the appeals process. There are other cases involving Act 10 or the collective bargaining law in federal courts. And summing up this one in terms of what is, you know, what the unions can still do, what they can't do, what school districts can and can't do in a negotiating is fairly complicated. But a judge held that this law, parts of it, violated the state constitution and declared it null and void.
Let's take a short pause, and then we will get to the November election results and talk some about, a little bit about, what we can expect in 2013. This is a year-ender state capitol report with Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Well, we are on the edge of the fiscal cliff. We'll get the very latest coming up after 8 o'clock. I'm Joy Cardine with Wisconsin Public Radio's Sean Johnson with a recap of the top state news stories of the year, the top stories in state politics. And here we are now in November, Sean, and it's the elections. We have Tammy over Tommy.
We do, and, you know, both sides of that are big. I think Tammy Baldwin's victory was huge, not only in Wisconsin, but nationally for a few reasons, as she laid out here.
I am well aware that I will have the honor to be Wisconsin's first woman U.S. Senator. And I am well aware that I will be the first openly gay member. But I didn't run to make history. I ran to make a difference.
Mm-hmm. That was edited down from about a minute and a half. Just the elation in her campaign headquarters, the cheering, is as energetic as you've ever heard.
A lot of people didn't think she could beat a longtime popular former governor Tommy Thompson.
Did not. No, not only because of her background, but because Tommy Thompson is one of the most successful politicians in Wisconsin history, and he sounded legitimately crestfallen after his loss.
I thought sure we were going to win, and I really thought we were going to win easily. I had no doubts in my mind when I woke up this morning that we were going to win the election, and I was really shocked.
Yeah, and at the same time, President Obama carries Wisconsin.
Yeah, and this was he carried it pretty handily, and it was a big deal because, you know, not only did you have Paul Ryan on the ticket for Republicans, this came just a few months after the recall. Reince Priebus, the RNC chair, was saying, we're going to focus on Wisconsin, we're going to pick up these votes. And it kind of became critical to any type of path to victory for Mitt Romney. Didn't happen, though. President Obama remained popular here in Wisconsin, not quite as popular as in 2008, but he won big. And we heard from him a few times during this campaign season, including once in Madison at UW-Madison campus. When he was, this was actually the day after his first debate performance, when President Obama was saying that, Mitt Romney, the guy that he met on the stage last night, kind of changed his positions.
When I got on the stage, I met this very spirited fellow who claimed to be Mitt Romney. But I know it couldn't have been Mitt Romney.
So at the top of the ticket, we have Obama taking Wisconsin, Tammy Baldwin winning the U.S. Senate seat. But the Senate, the Wisconsin Senate, flipped to Republican hands.
Yes, it did. And we'll step slightly out of sequential order here and just backtrack to June 5th. All the focus was on Scott Walker winning the recall election. But at the same time, you had John Lehman winning his state Senate recall election in Racine, giving Democrats, at least for the summer or part of it, a majority in the state Senate.
I really believe that a divided legislature often moves toward reasonableness, and that what we would hope to see is leadership in both houses get together and say, what can we do for the people of Wisconsin without arguing and without throwing rocks at one another? I look forward to that. I look forward to trying to help that.
But that was, of course, short-lived as Republicans picked up two seats in the November elections, and Senator Scott Fitzgerald was majority leader again.
You know, I truly believe that there's kind of a renewed effort to work across the aisle and get back to kind of a normal temperature when it comes to the legislature.
And, in addition to the changes in the Senate this year, you also had a couple new leaders in the legislature. Robin Voss will be the new Assembly Speaker next year, leading Republicans. Jeff Fitzgerald steps down. He ran unsuccessfully for U.S. Senate. And then in the Senate, leading Senate Democrats is going to be Chris Larson, a young member of their caucus who's moved up in the ranks very quickly. Chris Larson will be the Democratic minority leader in the Senate.
And we had longtime U.S. Senator Herb Kohl give his farewell just this past month, I think.
We did. Mm-hmm. Sir Herb Kohl, who was first elected in 1988, gave a very brief and very modest concession speech on the Senate floor.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise today for one final time to address the Senate. My remarks will be brief, and actually, I just want to say one thing. Thank you.
And set this up real quick. This audio didn't come from 2012, but there's a desk drawer full of old cassette tapes at the WPR Capitol Bureau, and one of them had audio from 1989 State Democratic Convention. And one of the speakers was a younger Herb Kohl thanking people for sending him to Washington.
I do like my colleagues very much. I'm very happy to tell you that they almost are, without exception, very bright, and they are very honest, very hardworking men and women. We all try to do our very best in behalf of people that we represent. I think that I've done very well in terms of my votes, the things that I've stood for. I'm learning a lot. I think I'm going to turn out to be a good senator to represent your best interests.
Well, you know, and what's interesting about that speech is that in both in tone and in content, very similar to the farewell speech that he would give many years later. Herb Kohl, consistent in sort of that modest thank you tone.
We're going to have to leave it there, Sean. Yep. We're out of time. Thanks very much for this year-end look back at the at politics in the state of Wisconsin. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.